Hello, big boys and girls, parents and grandparents, and everyone interested in AI and robotics. I'm Anastasia, and I'm bringing to your attention AI Snacks with Romy and Robbie, a show for AI muggles, not wizards. Together with my guests, who are scientists and practitioners in AI and robotics, I translate digital technologies from difficult to easy to understand. After having spent 30 years in executive and technology roles in companies such as Munich Re, McKinsey, Dun & Bradstreet, Deutsche Telekom, Qualcomm, I created AI Edutainment. And this company aims at democratizing the knowledge of AI with general public, starting with children and their very clever parents and grandparents. And today, I have a fabulous guest, and it's a real treat because I don't have too many AI scientists and practitioners who are women. We are joined by Olivia Gamblin, and she's a founder and CEO of Ethical Intelligence, and she leads a team of over 30 experts who are bringing their expertise and ethical analysis into product development. So her company truly operationalizes what we call AI ethics, translating this field to something which is completely practical and embedding it into the product lifecycle. Olivia is master in philosophy from the University of Edinburgh, where she focused on autonomous vehicles and control. And she's a co-founder of Beneficial AI Society, a wonderful organization, and she sits on the advisory board of Tech Scotland Advocates. So after today's podcast, you will be capable to explain what is AI ethic and what does it mean to be very practical about it. So, Olivia, welcome to my show. I'm so thrilled. And I know you live in San Francisco, but you are joining today from Belgium, right?
Yes. And it's great to be here, Anastasia.
That's really wonderful. And obviously, I'm always asking the same question at the beginning. Could you please talk about yourself and emphasize 2 to 3 moments who formed you and led you to where you are today?
Absolutely. So I'm Olivia Gamblin. I am an AI ethicist, one of those that you hear floating around. There's more of us coming out, but I was one of the first that made that transition out of academia and into industry. Oh gosh, probably about 6-7 years back when AI ethics first started to become something that industry practitioners were paying attention to. Since then, it's been quite an interesting development since I started the company Ethical Intelligence back when there was no market for this kind of work, and have built that company up from the ground. We started more as a think tank, and now we're consultancy. And my own career has taken off in many different directions. I do a lot of professional speaking on topics around AI, human values. Lately, it's been a lot about adoption, if I'm being honest, and the like. And so, I like the question about 3 or so, a few turning points in my career. I'd say the first one was early on when I was just discovering the field of AI ethics. I come from a background of digital strategy and communication, and I've always been in startup adjacent, and always focused in AI. Comes with the territory of growing up right outside San Francisco. And I remember I was at this conference and I heard a woman talking about the next big thing in specifically data and data and AI was data ethics. And that was like a light bulb moment for me. I had been doing my studies in philosophy and ethics. I thought it was fascinating. That was my undergrad, my bachelor's. But I had left that saying, I don't want to be an armchair philosopher. I want to do something with this. So the moment I find something practical to do with ethics, I'll go back to this field. And that topic of hearing data ethics and AI ethics, it was, oh my goodness, my professional career and my love of ethics, there's actually a place for both of that. So I'd say that was a huge turning point. And then I would say, probably in the most recent history, my first book came out. It's called Responsible AI, Implement an Ethical Approach in Your Organization. And that's been a game changer for me. It's pulled me out from behind the scenes of the company and made me own my voice, let's say, instead of getting to hide behind a company. I really had to own my voice and my opinions and expertise. And that's been a fantastic learning experience. I guess I have a future shaping point, let's say. This coming Friday, I officially start the research for my second book as well as a PhD. So that is, I'm sure, going to be another turning point in my career.
Oh, absolutely so. And actually, the field is really very, very young. And frankly, massive deployment of AI technology is still, I would say, at the very beginning, though Yuval Harari is already writing that computer have started dominating our entire life. And computers, so the machines without consciousness and soul, are already members in the information network. So prior to that, they were just humans. And now we have computers which are independently doing things with us, for us, maybe against us. Mm. I would be quite curious if you kind of think, and you are in the heart of the happening, so Silicon Valley. So we had a number of events there. So Cambridge Analytica scandals and Brexit, then obviously Trump election, then the scandals around Facebook algorithms, then what was going on in Alphabet and Google. So there were a number of illustrious exits from those companies. And very recently, OpenAI with the full bonanza around AGI and whether it is ethical to pursue what they are doing. If you kind of observe those developments, what are the common themes there? Could you maybe summarize them and derive your own so what's out of them?
If I were to break it down into the most simple of terms, because these are all very complex happenings and none of this is to be taken lightly. These are
absolutely
major developments as well. I would say, at least from the technical side, what tends to happen and a key factor in a couple of those major cases, as you were just saying, was the detachment of AI innovation from human impact, where we focused on what can we do with this technology without regard to what does the impact bring to the humans on the other end. And so from my perspective, the reason that we've been developing artificial intelligence and all of the different subsets, the whole reason for all of this innovation is to drive human impact. And when we detach the innovation and make the innovation an end in of itself, where that is the only goal, then we start to see these negative effects, because we're not looking at the bigger picture. We're not looking at how does this impact the person, when really that was the whole point of this at the start.
That's, I think it's a brilliant answer, actually. And it's quite difficult today to paint the whole picture, because we still struggle to identify consequences on what is being developed. And, you know, I interviewed one brilliant AI scientist, Dmitry Fischer, and I quote him. He said, look, AI adoption of AI is not a pet to be adopted. It's a technology, or it's a toolbox which humans might use or might not use. And sometimes we should think, should we use it? If, for example, an hour of compute costs $15, maybe we should let humans do the thing and not let machines do the thing for, you know, CO2 emissions and just the costs. If I kind of try to give you a quote and be very precise, what is AI ethics today? How would you define it?
This is a great one, because I treat ethics like a science, which is not something that you'll typically hear. So I need to give you two definitions here, actually. There is AI ethics and there's responsible AI.
Okay.
And you hear them interchanged a lot, but they're actually very different things. So let me start actually with responsible AI, and this will make sense in a second. Responsible AI is basically good business practice. It should be the standard practice in AI development, adoption, and so on. It's like being a responsible adult. you do things like empty the dishwasher because you are being responsible. There's nothing ethical about that. It just means you are doing what you're supposed to do. You are doing what needs to be done so that things function properly. That's responsible AI. AI ethics, instead, focuses specifically on ethical values and how we make decisions in alignment with our values. So if we're talking about emptying the dishwasher again, you as a responsible adult, you will go empty the dishwasher. But let's say you go home and it's not your turn to empty the dishwasher, but your partner's turn. But your partner's really stressed and they're exhausted. And so out of compassion, the value of compassion, you empty the dishwasher. You make the decision to act on your values. That's AI ethics when we're looking at it, where you are taking your values and you are aligning key decisions with those values. So I guess if I'm going to boil down those definitions, because I know you want the sound bite here, responsible AI is good business practice. AI ethics is the decision-making process to align artificial intelligence with human values.
And this is already such a huge theme because obviously AI is being developed in multiple places on this planet.
Yeah.
And if we talk about values, then geography, so location, maybe time period, they play a huge role. And I guess, Oliver, you and I both would be burned as witches on the stick in the medieval Europe. Oh. That would have happened out of very ethical reason to save our souls. So if you read the scripts of Spanish Inquisitions from the 14th and 15th century, then it's very obvious that burning witches was considered ethical.
Yeah.
So obviously, ethics in the United States and in Europe, so-called Western world, and then ethics in Russia, and then in China, and maybe in India, and in Japan, those aren't exactly the same pair of shoes. So how do humans agree if they target something which could be scaled so fast as AI technologies?
I love that you bring this up because it hits on two very important factors. One, something called moral maturity. So as you were talking, you and I would be burned at the stake for being witches, you know, hundreds of years ago. The reason why we're not burned at the stake today, for many reasons, but there's this concept called moral maturity that humans, society as a whole, as we go through these centuries, not just individual lifetimes, but the combination of all these hundreds and thousands and millions of lifetimes together, then we mature in our understanding of what is good and what is bad.
Yeah.
So thankfully, today we've understood now that burning someone because you think they are a witch is not necessarily a good thing. So we have matured as a society in our moral understanding, which is something that is very uniquely human and is incredibly important because it allows us to grow and develop. It's like evolution for our values. And that's something very important when we're looking at AI, because when you are going to scale AI and you're scaling these value applications, people want a check, say just a list of this is good, this is bad. When we are embedding these values at such a hard-coded foundation, we risk something called moral lock-in, where we are making these moral decisions and then locking ourselves into them. So let's say we had AI back in the 1400s, we would lock in the fact that you need to burn witches or burn women that seem to be witches. That would have been locked in as a decision. And then we would not have been able to mature as a society because that decision would have been scaled. So there's a lot of responsibility these days when we are encoding these different values to allow for the ability to mature, go back, change and adapt as we grow, where we don't take necessarily the hard-coded decisions from AI, but we're able to use those outputs and grow from them. Another point there that I want to touch on real quick is when we're looking at these values, like you were saying, they are not necessarily ones and zeros. So
yes,
we're looking at what traditionally feels very vague and abstract. there's actually some value inputs that you can look for that help you triangulate. These are the values that matter in our decision making. You're looking on a national and global level for any type of regulations. We're now seeing regulations put into place, different values and principles that we need to follow. You're looking at industry standards. So for example, healthcare.
Yeah.
There is longstanding industry standards in healthcare that you have to follow. And then we're looking at those company values and mission as well. And that dictates the kind of customers and clients that you are servicing. So the combination of those three different inputs creates what I like to call your core foundational value set that you then align your decisions with. So lots to cover there in terms of values, but hopefully that starts to touch on a little bit of why you shouldn't burn us at the stake.
Absolutely so. And, you know, when I discuss AI with people who aren't technologists, so obviously the common information about these technologies is that they mirror us. So obviously it works on data and, you know, bunch of historical data, and here you have it. And obviously in healthcare, which you've just mentioned, there's this known gender data gap, because just historically, many therapies were developed on cohorts of female probands. So male probands, I'm sorry, and then transferred to female patients. And this is the reason why so many women die more on coronary heart disease than men. So they just were not adjusted. So the therapies were not adjusted to the gender. And of course, if you are conscious about that there is this gender gap, you might think twice when reviewing your data set. And here there are a couple of interesting stories. You might remember when Gemini came out, and out of sudden, this large language model gave us black founders of the United States. So you can alter data. Can you maybe talk a little bit about this fact, and how does it go that you kind of intrude your new beliefs and standards into something as history-based as language and AI?
So this is a great example of how our different weights, if we're speaking technically, but how our different priorities will play into the output of a system. So with Gemini specifically, they over-prioritized the value of inclusivity. In this modern day and age, you know, 200 years even, since what would have looked quite different back then, we value inclusivity at a different scale than historically speaking. So nowadays, when we are setting up these systems, yes, we have a heavy emphasis, a heavy weight on that inclusivity factor. The challenge, though, is that's not always the right value to prioritize. I'm not saying to ignore it. I'm saying there are different prioritization. It's different trade-offs with different values. So in this case with Gemini, what was needed was actually higher priority for accuracy. We needed the output that we wanted was historically factual accuracy, not necessarily inclusivity. We want inclusivity, but that specific use case was not the time and place for that value to be prioritized. It was actually accuracy that needed to be prioritized. So when it comes to making these decisions in accordance with our values, that trade-off between knowing what value is the predominant value that needs to be, or the one that needs to be prioritized, is just as important as knowing the values, because you can have values, but if you're prioritizing the wrong one at the wrong time, you get results like crazy Gemini pictures that we look at and go, ooh, that's a little bit off.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, so obviously, if we talk language, Yuval Harari is really worried that AI hacked language. And I'm quoting from his book, by hacking language, computers could make it extremely difficult for large numbers of humans to conduct a meaningful public conversation. But I mean, if we look into the math, computers don't understand language because they process statistically a token stream. Mm-hmm. And token is not even a word. I think it's like 2/3 of an English word. Sure. So our architectures today are not based on language, which mammals, human mammals, and we can argue some other mammals understand. Do you think that the next wave for AI might be to embed reasoning and understanding into those machines? How do you think about today's architectures and what might be needed or what might come? If at all.
I would say that the current architectures of our LLM, our generative AI systems, are not built for reasoning. They're built for predictability, for predicting. It's a very different structure. I can't imagine the current architecture being able to incorporate that kind of reasoning capability. Instead, what I'm actually very interested in is neurosymbolic AI, which has the potential for more of that reasoning base. It's based on coming from philosophy, the philosophical logic
yes.
Our logicians. And that is reasoning in and of itself, whereas generative AI and these LLMs are predicting the next word. It's not looking at understanding. It's looking at, I heard someone call it a word calculator once. And
yeah.
Really love that. So, no, in the sense that we haven't hacked language with generative AI, even though it may feel like it, we haven't hacked language there. We haven't hacked reasoning. There are other architectural models, though, that have the potential for us to go deeper, to dive deeper into that reason, that logical reasoning.
And Olivia, I actually love your answer because, in my eyes, the next iteration should be really fusing what is out there today in deep learning architectures, transform architecture, and neurosymbolistic AI. And this requires actually funding. And this is an issue, right? Because this might evolve in the next 30 years. It requires tons of money without a very, true outcome, and companies hate it. So because obviously they would like to ride the wave of ROI and get dollars for what they do today. Mm-hmm. And this brings me to another section of this podcast. I would like you to describe an engagement of your team in a very practical project. So what does it mean to be practical around embedding AI ethics and data ethics into a product lifecycle and product design? Could you maybe talk a little bit about it?
Yeah. Okay. Let me give you two scenarios, because I did say that there's the difference between responsible AI and AI.
Yes. Ethics.
So with responsible AI, these are very common projects now. This is very common work. There's a default to think that responsible AI is compliance, when truly a company that is building to scale and sustain their AI practices, they view responsible AI as a strategic operational structure. So a common engagement there is actually building out that responsible AI strategy. And how I focus on it is I look at the people, process, and technology. It's actually the values canvas. You can go online. It's at thevaluescanvas.com, and you can download the framework for free. And it goes over the main factors. There's 9 different factors that go into what I would say is just an AI strategy, but is a responsible AI strategy. And so a typical engagement would look like going through a company and saying, okay, what do you have in place? What are you missing? And what can we adapt that you currently have? And then building out those 9 different factors that will support a long-term solution. And that I won't go into total detail. You can go check it out for yourself. But those 9 factors go along the people, process, technology. Are your people trained and educated? Do you have the right culture in place? Process is, do you have the right frameworks and operational structure in place? And then technology is quite literally looking at the infrastructure, your technical infrastructure in the company to be able to support basic responsible AI, doing what you are supposed to do when it comes to AI. That's responsible AI. AI ethics, typically, or at least my favorite projects, actually work with design teams where we're at the very start looking at what values are going to be the defining factors for this AI solution. And there's a couple different ways that you can go about finding the values that you'll prioritize. I give a little bit of a hint with the three different inputs, your core foundations, but sometimes companies say, hey, well-being is going to be the defining factor. This is going to be our differentiating factor. Great. What that means then is understanding what well-being means in that current context. So what industry are you operating in? Who are your client? Who are your target customers? What kind of outcomes are you looking to generate that create that well-being? So when you're working with AI ethics in that design phase, you're building out a roadmap of feature set that will enable your users to have that well-being experience that you're designing for. So a couple different directions there, but that's a responsible AI and that's AI ethics.
Actually, I absolutely love it, especially when you introduced ethical AI and how to embed it into real products and design of products. I was thinking actually the practice, this exercise forces you to review how do you model the parameters. And just being an AI practitioner, if I see a first time team modeling whatsoever, and they get from the first attempt like 50% of the parameters right, I'm like, UI God. I really kind of, on my knees, because AI is very tricky and just, finding out what works, it takes time. So if you have this strategy in mind and you are really conscious, this is what I would like to emphasize. So it's like already in kind of a template, which will move your parameter setting and your whole modeling exercise is into a certain direction. It might actually save time instead of cost time, and time is money.
Exactly. It's like AI at first was like this wild west of let's see what we can get to work. Let's see what directions we can go in. And now we have at least some understandings of what impact we want to drive. And so creating that, I call it like the North Star. It helps keep people pointed in the right direction. When you can't necessarily sit down with every single developer that you're working with, it keeps everyone with that same point of reference that they're making decisions off of.
Yes. And Olivia, we haven't touched yet another term, which is XAI or explainable AI. Yeah. And this is like a science in itself, because those deep neural networks with so many layers make it tremendously complex for humans to understand what truly contributes to the decision making within a model. Do you think that introducing ethical AI practices might help with XAI, or is it something completely separate?
I would say that I would almost flip it. So I would say that within the ethical AI practices, those will help guide you to what level of explainability you need, meaning you don't necessarily always need white box technology. You don't necessarily always need to know every single decision factor and weight, depending on the use case. There are other use cases in highly sensitive fields where you cannot have black box technology. You absolutely need to know every single decision going into it. Again, healthcare example, one of the first AI systems that was used to experiment in being able to diagnose cancer was a black box system until they had to go back and pick it apart to understand that the system, even though it had a 99% accuracy rate for diagnosing lung cancer, was actually not reading at all the x-rays of lungs. It was reading whether or not the doctor had signed at the bottom if it was a diagnosed case or not. So that kind of example, you need to have the explainability to see, oh, that is not the decision factor that we need this based off of. But you can have other cases like correlation happening in, let's say, recommendation algorithms, where it's not life or death, and it's more of, okay, it's okay that the decision-making factor isn't necessarily what we think it is, or if we don't have a strong grip on it. So to round this all back before I go too far down the rabbit hole, I would say that XAI and ethical AI, using ethical practices to understand what level of explainability is necessary, is a core practice and a very close collaboration between these fields.
Yeah. And Olivia, may I ask you, and we are already nearing the end of this podcast, are you an AI optimist? How do you define yourself?
I'm always an optimist. I would say I'm a human optimist, because to me, at the end of the day, AI has always been a story about humans.
Yes.
And for me, I'm fascinated, even as we were talking about the difference between hacking language and then actually understanding and reason and logic. To me, I look at that as, this is not necessarily it's not a technical story at the bottom. It's a human story at the bottom. You know, what is our reasoning? What is our language capabilities? We're trying to unpack those as we go. So I am a human optimist in the sense that at the end of the day, we will find ways to make this technology work for us. As long as we start, we bridge that gap, we reconnect the AI innovation with human impact. If we can really focus in on that, reconnecting that, then I am very optimistic about what we as humans can accomplish with this technology.
I'm absolutely with you. I just think that because this technology is so important, and it's so important because, frankly, in the Western world, for example, we lack humans. So we really need automation and AI to fill the gaps and to ease the workload on humans. So the whole policy around the labor markets and how it's regulated needs to have the component of automation and AI. But at the same time, I just think we need human readiness for these technologies. And this is why, actually, I'm doing this very podcast and write Rome and Robbie. We need to start educating people about these technologies, showing them that this is not some, you know, gruy monster who will eat us all, but it might be a collaborator, but it's up to us to shape the way and show the way. So, Olivia, I'm tremendously grateful for your time. And I mean, we can talk for hours. I even did not start asking you about AI regulations. Maybe you can come out once more, once again, and we will cover this because my audience is very interested in what is going on in regulatory attempts to address automation and AI. But I will conclude now this episode of AI Snacks with Romy and Robbie. And please support this show and buy the first volume of Romy and Robbie series, which is Romy, Robbie and the Secrets of Sleep, a book dedicated to quantum computing and hardware. And there are plenty of discussions on what is consciousness, what is life, what is intelligence in this very book. Digestible for children, as Dmitry Fischer said, children of 2 to 102. And please have fun. I hope you enjoyed the discussion. Olivia, all the best to you, and have a very, very good day. Thank you.